landing zones were was supposed to have been cleared landing zone, and they were supposed to have been safe zones, but a lot of times you would get sniper fire, and a lot of times the old elephant grass was so high it'd be dangerous going into the landing zone. But we would go in and we'd drop off the troops, and then later on, after the operations were over with, we'd go back and pick up the troops. And then also, if they had to stay in for a while on operation, we would go and drop supplies. Like I say, we could only fly every other month. Then we had to stay off the flight pad, and then I would work on the helicopters. We'd do our monthly checks on them and maintenance on the helicopters. We had some problems with helicopters right after we first got over there. The T-58 jet engines had a problem with picking up a lot of debris and sand, and it eat the blades up on the jet engine. So about a month after we got over there, we had to down all the helicopters and put new engines in them. And then Boeing Vertol had to send some new filters over for the engines. So it took us about a month to really get the helicopters back in flight again before we could.
How did you become aware of the problem? Did you have some crashes?
We had a couple of bad crashes. Nobody got hurt. You'd lose one engine, and we could fly on one engine. And then we got to looking at the blades in the helicopter and the engines, and the sand, it just looked like this sandpaper, the blades, so we had to pull all the engines out and put new engines in. We got the problem solved with some bigger filters on the helicopters, and we got back to normal operations, but we still had to shut down so many helicopters each month for maintenance. And then a lot of times we would get we'd get bullet holes in them, or they would sit down close to landmines, and we'd have to come in and rebuild them, and we'd send them down to the Philippines to get rebuilt, and they'd send us a new helicopter. I run a night shift part-time to keep some of the helicopters going. I had four men that we had to maintain the helicopters at night, but they wasn't flying at night. We didn't do a whole lot of night flying, but we did some night flying. When we first went over, we was doing a little harassment of troops, it was called, I guess. We flew the helicopter with a big light in the back of it, and when we would receive fire from Vietcong, Huey helicopter would come in with rockets, and they would shoot the Vietcong, or shoot at them, whatever, if they didn't go into tunnels. And they said this was inhuman, that we couldn't do this anymore. We had to wait till we received normal fire before we could fire back. I stayed there at Marlin Mountain till September, and then one day I was transferred to Dong Ha, Vietnam, which is right below the border. A friend of mine and I went up there. We had to go up and set up a hydraulic and metal shop because there was one of the biggest battles of the Vietnam War was going to be fought in the next 3 weeks, called the Battle of Hastings. They had found out that a lot of the North Vietnamese was infiltrating into South Vietnam, and this operation was designed to stop the infiltration into South Vietnam. So we went up and we set up a metal shop, and this was just out in a barren wasteland field, rice paddies. And it was our job to keep the helicopters flying as far as metal and hydraulics, and to go in, if we got a helicopter shot down, to go in and strip all the electronic gear and everything, get off the helicopter, then blow the helicopter up, so that the Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese, wouldn't have anything left of the helicopter they could get. We stayed at this operation for about almost 3 weeks. They was troops as far as you could see, loading and unloading off the helicopter. At this particular time, I ran into a friend of mine who was in aviation school with me at Memphis, and he had failed out of aviation school, and he was what we call a grunt in the Marine Corps, or infantry. And he was going onto the border up there in Vietnam. I talked to him for a few minutes, and he said it was one of the biggest mistakes he ever made when he fell out of aviation school, because he said he had been in the jungle for several weeks at a time, and he had hand grenades all over him, bandolier and ammo, and he looked rough.
Do you think it was true then that the less intellectual you are, then they put you on the front? Or?
I wouldn't say that. It was, you know, a lot of people, the ones that got drafted, you know, they just put them where they wanted to put them. But if you went in on an aviation guarantee in the Marine Corps or in the Army or Air Force or whatever, because the Air Force didn't get into the jungles like we did, they were some well-educated people on the front line.
Mm-hmm. But they were drafted.
They were drafted. If you volunteered as a grunt, wanted to be a grunt, some people, that's what they wanted. They wanted to fight the war on the ground. Like I said, when I went in, I wanted to get me an education out of it, and I wanted to benefit from it. I wouldn't say that it was any more dangerous on the ground than it was in a helicopter, because they said if the helicopter got shot down, he was going to be in the jungle anyways. But this was one of the worst operations that was in here in 66, 67. We made it through this operation. We had several helicopters shot down. We had two of our helicopters that ran together in this operation, and they was all the troops aboard the helicopter was killed. Pilot, the co-pilot, and two gunners was not killed. We went in and we stripped the helicopters and blew them. Mm-hmm. Got out.
You were able to rescue the gunners.
Right. We went in and the QE gunships rescued the gunners and pilots and got them out. We started back from this operation, and there was another helicopter that was shot down, and we was going in to rescue this other helicopter. He was sitting on the edge of a minefield, and as we was going in, we got shot down, which wasn't real bad. They hit a hydraulic line on one of the jet engines, and we were only about 30 feet off the ground. We just had a hard landing. We got it repaired, and we picked up the other pilots and co-pilots and gunners, and we got out and flew back to Penang, the Marble Mountain. We stayed at Marble Mountain. I was at Marble Mountain. We had several mortar attacks, and one night we had, I guess, about 300 or 400 mortars dropped on us in the little old recreation tent below where I slept on the flight line. They blowed it away with mortars. That night, the North Vietnamese did not come across Highway 1 that night. The CB stopped them before they come into our area.
So they might easily have taken that over.
Right. These Vietnamese, this was guerrilla operations. All it was guerrilla operations. They would hit, then they would leave. And it was normal for them to mortar. And then there would be a whole company of Vietnamese would come in, and they would pull their clothes off and grease their bodies to crawl through this concertina wire that we had set up around our area. And we had guards all around them, because we had to try to protect the helicopters, because that was the main support force. But this particular night, the guerrillas did not come in. They did get on Highway 1, and there were several guerrillas killed, and there was a lot of machine gun fire and a lot of action going on. Like I say, I slept on the flight line in a bunker made out of sandbags. Two other Marines slept with me in just a little old bunker. It was about 10 by 10.
Mm-hmm.
We had three bunks set up in the bunker. We slept in the bunkers. We were over there mainly if we had to get had to do a medevac or had to get the helicopters out that night. We were there ready to get them out, help the pilots get them out, fly them out. I stayed at Marble Mountain till April, last of April of 1967. Then they transferred us to Quay Phu Bai.
How long were you over there before you got to come home?
I was over there. I was actually in country in Vietnam 12 months. But then I got to come home. And when I come home, my time was up in the Marine Corps and served my 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't have to go back?
I didn't have to go back. If I'd had a stayed in the Marine Corps, I would have had to go back.
You didn't want to go back?
I didn't really want to go back, no.
Mm-hmm.
Sure didn't.
Okay, go ahead and finish.
Like I say, we flew up the last April. We flew up to Don Ha. To Huey Phu Bai. This area was it was closer to the border. This area was It was in a valley, and there was mountains all around us. They did not have room in the regular compound for our Marine unit, and they put us outside the perimeter, between close to the flight line, and the flight line was just Qantas huts and a little metal flight line made out of marshal matting. We set up 8-man tents, and we put dug trenches around them to keep the rain out. We had about 12 men in these tents. You always had to sleep in mosquito nets over there too. If you didn't, you'd get malaria, and you had to take your malaria pills. So we was outside of these tents, and we had water. We had water rationing too during this time, and all we had to take a shower with, we had an old fuel tank out off of one of the airplanes that had been washed out, and we used it to take a shower with. We had been over at Huey Phu Bai for about 3 or 4 days, I guess, and we got hit with mortars one night. It started about 12 o'clock at night, and they hit us with 381-millimeter mortars. These mortars were U.S. made. They were made from 41 to 44. They dropped by about 300 in artillery. No one was killed. Like the tent next to mine, it was blown away.
Where did they get U.S.?
Well, these mortars was used during the Korean War, and I imagine they were captured from the U.S. during the Korean War. It's the only place I know they could got them. Part of these mortars did not go off because it was old, which was, I guess, was lucky for us.
Mm-hmm.
They dropped these mortars on us for about 3 hours, and mortars, they work on your mind real bad because you hear a whistle and then you hear a thud, and if you don't hear the thud, they say you're dead. I was in my mosquito net that night, and all of a sudden I heard something boom, boom, and they were walking down the flight line, and they was fire going everywhere. And all, we didn't have any bunkers, so I just rolled out of my mosquito net and grabbed my M14, and we lived in a ditch about 18 inches deep, and we lay down in these ditches. The mortar attack was over with.
It was just by chance the one that landed on you because
it was by chance,
there.
Right? The one that landed in the tent next to us. Luckily, the guy had an old box. It was come off of one of the engines came over in it, and the mortar happened to go down into the box. And the guy was landing a rack next to it in the bunk next to it, and it did not injure him at all. One of the guys ran out of the tent and he stepped on a stile and got injured when he came out of the tent. We did have several guys that got wounded in our outfit. We had a CO that came over. He was over there about a week, and they shot him in the foot till he was flying the helicopter, and they shot up through the glass bubble, shot into his foot. And then we had one helicopter that got shot down. We lost it somewhere between Huey Phu Bai and Marble Mountain. The pilot, the co-pilot, and the gunner went down in the jungle. We found this helicopter was found about a year later. But that was and we had one crew chief that got killed out of our outfit during this year. He went down, he was unloading troops, and he went down the ramp on the helicopter in the North Vietnamese, shot him between the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a good buddy that got killed. He got transferred south of Marble Mountain. But he got killed. It wasn't a combat operation. He got killed, and he accidentally fell in the ocean with a shark gun. But I left over there on May the 20th of 1967 and came back to El Toro, California, and was released from the Marine Corps.
Are you still in contact with anybody that?
Yes, I have a good friend which I was in Vietnam with, Jim Roberts. He lives over. He's a deputy sheriff over in Douglasville, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I have a good friend up in Jamestown, Ohio, that was in my outfit. I have another in Washington State that I have a good friend in South Carolina that I'm still in contact with. Mm-hmm. We have not had any squadron reunions or anything. And I have another friend up in, I have two friends up in South Carolina that I've been in contact with in the last couple of years.
Did they go back for any more tours? Or they?
No, they did not go back for any more tours. Now, I had one other friend, Richard Davenport. He went back for another tour, but he made it back okay, and he came. He worked at Lockheed at the same time that I worked at Lockheed Aircraft. Mm-hmm.